Gray, a John Maxwell Certified Leadership Coach. Welcome to Life, Love, and Leadership, where we discuss everything pertaining to life, love, and leadership. Let's get started. Hello, and welcome to Life, Love, and Leadership. I'm Tom Ray, and joining me on the line is my co-host and friend, Ken Shelton. Hey, Ken, how you doing?
Hello, Tom. It's great to be with you, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers. We're so happy that you've decided to listen to us today. Today, we are going to be talking about one of the most important topics that leadership really has. It is a topic that without, you will never accomplish what you're called and that you aspire to do. But first, let's talk about our attitude of gratitude. We are a thankful people. I read yesterday, in fact, I read an article about the plasticity of the brain, the brain's ability to adapt and grow and be in a positive position. And here was the research that when we are grateful, our brains are more elastic, plasticity. They're ready to stretch. The position of gratitude, the thankfulness, is that it's ready to just accept whatever has to be done. So I have an attitude of gratitude today. And the word that I want to focus on is shopping. I know that you didn't expect that. Yesterday, my wife came to me and she said, hey, I'm going to go to Costco and then to the Gap outlet store in Howell, and I'll be an hour and a half. And I wondered if you wanted to go with me. And I thought, I can spare an hour and a half. 5 hours later, we came home. And so I spent time with my wife. But here's the thing. We were able to stop and eat pizza. I would not have had pizza yesterday had it not been for shopping. But shopping worked up an appetite. Now, this is where we're going with shopping, okay? Shopping creates in you an appetite, either for the things that you want, you're seeing to purchase, or let's get out of here so we can get some pizza. So for me, I'm grateful for shopping because I got pizza. How's that? What's yours, Tom?
That's wonderful. You know, there are so many things sometimes that we just seem to overlook. But today I'm thankful for pliers. You know, they're just so wonderful when you've got to grab something that you couldn't get to. Perhaps a wrench would be a better word for some people, or a better tool. But pliers, hey, you know, they're not great until you need them, right? And when you need them and you got them, hey, the world is all at ease. So that's mine today, pliers.
Very good.
Yeah.
So our topic today is pliers. No, it's not. Our topic today is all about resilience, being resilient. I'm sure you know that word. You've been in positions where you've needed to be resilient, but today we're going to take a deep dive and we're going to investigate what resilience really means, where it came from, and what it looks like. We have a little definition here that might help you, just so we're all on the same page. Resilience is the process and the outcome of successfully adapting to difficult or challenging life experiences. I'm going to leave that right there because that's a pretty intense definition, but it's a process. It's what happens in your brain, in your makeup. Some people are timid, and their timidity causes them to always sort of step back, especially if they feel they might be hurt or they might find opposition. There are other people who are aggressive and they're just going to mow people down. But the best is a person who approaches a relationship or an objective with a positive mindset. And if they get bumped or knocked back, they're immediately ready to stand back up and go forward.
Yeah.
So resilience is powerful. Tom, talk to us about how you see resilience.
Well, I think at the core of it, resilience is that ability to bounce back, to rebound when things are going chaotic some of the time. I remember my song, Stand United, that I wrote referencing the 9/11. By the way, the song was released on September 11, 2002.
Oh, okay. And,
yeah, so right on that anniversary. But the song said, we will snap back with resilience and make everything new, talking about our country coming back. The other part of the song is, we will rise from the rubble, right? And so it just talks about that quest to revitalize, to come back to life, to not allow life's adversities to keep us at bay. The chorus is, we will stand united, side by side, brave and strong. We will not be defeated, though we're tried, we will carry on. We will fight and we will pray, raise our flag and say, as a nation under God, we will stand.
Oh, that's good.
It just has this powerful anthem to it, but it's that snap back with resilience. We will come out of this and be a better person. And you know, yeah. As a side note on that song, when I first started singing it before crowds in the early years following 9/11, a lot of people didn't know how to take that song, and there was just this awkwardness in the air. And then about 5-6 years after the anniversary of 9/11, the song then became an anthem, and people were on their feet and felt charged, because I think in that early stage there was still a lot of mourning going on, a lot of grief happening from that time. But along the 5-year, 6-year mark and moving forward, it just became this song that just really empowered people. So that's what needs to happen. There needs to be a resurgence in a person's life. And have you ever heard of the will the real leader please stand up? You know, a lot of times it's not until adversity comes or we've experienced some form of calamity that the leader does show. And sometimes it's not the one that's been labeled the leader. Sometimes it's a different person altogether. But that's who steps up. Someone would call falling forward, right? You're hitting a speed bump, but you're continuing to snap back. And I love that. It's the ability to snap back in difficult times and being able to pivot and maneuver the obstacles that might come in our way. And so I hope that during this podcast today, we're going to actually dive into what it is to acquire resilience and how we can inspire others to have resilience too. But take it away, Ken.
All right. Well, you know, nobody likes a rattlesnake. We have a faulty notion about rattlesnakes. We think that rattlesnakes are aggressive, dangerous, that they are out to get you. But the truth is that a rattlesnake just wants to be left alone in his habitat, his or her habitat, so that they can go about what they're doing. Now, they perceive that anybody in their territory is a threat to their habitat. And so they will coil and strike. At the base of the word resilience, the etymology, which is tracking down where the word came from and what it means to recoil. So sometimes we are not fully convinced that we need to be doing a particular thing. So when we find obstacles or setbacks, our mind plays little superstitious tricks on us. Well, you know, we just need an open door. We just need an opportunity. If it's supposed to happen, it will happen. Don't push it. Well, I'm not sure who came up with that. There are no leaders with that mentality. Leaders are in a recoiled position so that if an obstacle, not a person, this is not being aggressive against a person, but against that thing, a mindset, a time frame, a deadline, somebody throws something in your way, you don't think twice about it. You recoil and strike. You're going to get what you want. So you cannot be half-hearted about it. Jesus was not at all confused about his mission. And he wanted to die on the cross. Now, physically, he didn't, but that was his mission. And if you got in his way, he was going to rebuke you. So the guy that started the New Testament church with Jesus was Peter. And when Jesus told Peter that he was going to die, Peter said, "No, not on my watch." And Jesus recoiled and he looked at him and he said, "Satan, get behind me." In other words, if you're not for me, you're against me. You got to be ready to go in that direction. So that's resilience. It's not just this passive, I took a nap and now I'm ready for tomorrow. No, sometimes we need rest. Resilience means you're ready to spring into action. And I think the lyric of your song referenced that, to spring, to strike now. Yeah. But not to do a person any harm, just to go at the mental barriers, the obstacles that might be before us.
Yeah, you know, how are we handling the small problems around us? You know, just the little things. Because we should not take those for granted.
That's right.
If we're able to maneuver even those small things, we can draw from that resource, from that time, from that experience, and say, you know what, as David, if we can reference him, when he went out to face Goliath, you know, King Saul was like, "Well, you're just a boy." Well, hey, you know, I was able to kill, you know, a bear and a lion, right? I had to snap back at that moment when a lion was coming to take my sheep, and I had to strike. I had to take charge in that moment. I didn't have time to process it or filter it through a board or,
you know, right,
of deacons or whatever. You know, I had to act. And we're not suggesting to anybody here about flying solo here and doing things alone. But what we are saying is that we need to take that step of faith in that moment and be resilient. And again, but it was those moments when David encountered the bear and the lion, which gave him the wherewithal to face Goliath.
Right.
And do so in a strength. He was able to, again, to pull from those moments with the bear and the lion that gave him a little more, like I said, wherewithal to contact and defeat the giant before him.
I remember 20 some years ago, I had made a decision to make a recording. I had written 10 songs I wanted to record, and I wanted to get it out there. I had recorded before, and I used my, at that point, LP, my long play album, as a ministry tool. And so I would preach services in a church, and I would have albums for sale on the table. And I sold them. I sold all that I had. I was excited about that. But I didn't have the mindset of a person who wanted to prevail in the music industry, because somewhere in my development, I had acquired a mindset that suggested that being ambitious is somehow a wrong posture for a dedicated Christian, that ambition is a wrong thing. that we need to wait on the Lord and the Lord will open doors, or we need to wait on opportunities. I think it's John Maxwell who stated in a leadership video, life just does not give you great opportunities and make you prevail. You have to have the perception of a leader so that you can perceive the opportunity and take it, and you've got to want it. So if a fullback, a running back on a football team is given a ball, he has to be ready to run that play, and he's going to look for that opening. And if there's not an opening, he's going to make one. He's going to run right for the pile, and he might get knocked down. But the next play, he's going to find a hole, and he's going to run right through it. That's what we're talking about. Resilience doesn't understand the word stop. Because you've analyzed ahead of time. And this is important. Resilience is possible because you have already counted the cost. Before you begin, you've taken time to understand what can come against you and that you want this thing. Because in today's world, if you don't want it, you're not going to get it. And if you step back from leading, you're abdicating. And, you know, that we call it abdicating, but you're taking your leadership. I have a mouse in my hand. It controls where things happen on my screen. If I drop it, if somebody bumps into me and I drop it and somebody else picks it up, if I'm in the middle of an important project, I can't say, go ahead and play with that. I got to say, give me that. I need that. I need that. That's mine. Now, that might hurt somebody's feelings, but it will get the project done. And so you count the cost, you envision what it takes, and you won't take no for an answer. But you do all of that with a smile on your face and with love in your heart, because our problem is not people. Even when people represent the problem, a person is not the problem. I'll never forget in conflict management training, we were given this little concept of when you're working with someone and there's a barrier, to have a little chat with them, to take them out to coffee, to meet them in the office, to make it non-threatening and say, Tom, you and I have a problem, but the problem isn't you and the problem isn't me. Let's look at this cup right here and say, this is the problem. What can you and I do to take care of that problem? Now I've turned a potential enemy into a colleague, someone who will help me conquer the problem. Somebody who saw me as an adversary now sees me as essential. And we could get it done. Thoughts?
Yeah, it's a wonderful perspective. I like what you said earlier, that the resilience doesn't know the word stop. And that's powerful. So some of what you said alluded to how we can acquire resilience. And so I think it's important that we understand that it doesn't necessarily come overnight. And sometimes there's a basic instinct within us, what that, right, that fight or flight mechanism kicks in when it's needed. And sometimes we'll rise to the challenge. But I think you were sharing earlier, it's kind of a preparation that takes us to that point, that prepares us for those moments when we need to strike. For instance, when we go to school, we learn how to do a fire drill. Right? We learn the process of fire drill. We say, okay, when this happens, this is how we're going to react. This is how we're going to snap back in that moment. I think there's a bit of wealth of knowledge there in the whole fire drill scenario. You know, when I go around and share about forgiveness, you know, the story of my sister who was killed, and then our family forgiving, I share the process of forgiveness. A lot of times we are not prepared to forgive when forgiveness is needed. And so I share with that same concept of the fire drill that we need to have a forgiveness drill. And what you said earlier, Ken, it was something similar to this, is that we've already made it up in our mind what we're going to do when we're faced with a situation. So like that fire drill, we already know what we're going to do. We've already laid out a plan. At least there's a plan in place, right? Now, there could be structure falling in at one portion of the building and you can't go the route that you originally prepared to go to, but you're already, your spidey senses, if you will, are already enacted and ready to go, or activated and ready to go. So that's what it's about. The same thing with forgiveness, the same thing with any adversity that comes our way. We've determined that we're going to take action, and we're not just going to lay there and go, what do I do? I've got to seek counsel on this. And sometimes we don't have time to seek counsel on something that's going on in our life. Sometimes we just have to be the one to take that step of faith in that moment to do what's necessary.
Resilience assumes an aggressive posture, but that doesn't mean you get to be a bully in the name of a virtue. You know, oh yeah, I'm really resilient, so get out of my way, you, yeah. You know, that's not what it's about. We're not in the business. Leaders are not in the business of dominating people. We don't roll over people to get what we want. We add people to our strength. If I can convince you that what I want, you also want, that it's better if both of us go after it, I have multiplied my capacity to win. I can win so much better with you and with you than I can all by myself. So a person who tends to be a bully is a person who feels like they have the odds stacked against them and they're going to dominate other people. It's not about dominating people. It's about understanding the prize and employing people to get the job done. So if I have, and here's a sort of a sidebar to it, let's say, Tom, that you have a mission that you really want to accomplish that you sort of ignored in the first part of your life because you were busy raising a family and making a career. And now as you enter middle life, you see this thing that you really have always wanted. And you ask yourself, should I go after this thing? Should I go get it? Well, you know, the first thing we generally do is we ask our spouse, you know, what do you think, hon? Well, spouses, so since we're men and we're referencing a spouse as a woman, women generally, not always, not all women, but generally women like to know that things are safe. Most women are risk averse. They don't like a lot of heavy-duty risks. They want to know that the bills are paid, that there's tomorrow, the kids are going to be happy. If they need shoes, they can go get them. The electric bill is going to be paid. Things are normal, right? So now you have to say to your spouse, hon, I know you love me, and I love you, and we're here to help one another. And I feel like I want to address this particular area and move forward in life. But I could tell you right now, I don't want to mess up the nest. Ooh, you've just said the magic phrase. I'm not trying to mess up home. I need you with me, but I don't need you with me to do what I'm doing. I covet your support because I am so much stronger when you're for me. And I'm not going to leave you behind. And there is no threat to your safety. Well, if your spouse loves you, it's done because you've assured her. So resilience assures the people around them that they can take it.
That's good. And so with that, I'm reminded of that African proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And so that's a powerful perspective there. But I think this next shift here in our podcast today is about inspiring resilience in others. And I think some of that comes from the way we live our life, those that are perhaps admiring us or following in our footsteps, so to speak, they're seeing that characteristic, that trait within us, that we're being resilient in the daily life or when adversity comes our way, but also inspiring
Pardon me.
resilience in others by encouraging them, perhaps through coaching, asking them, well, what would you do during this situation? Let's say, for instance, I remember last year or so, a worship leader was conducting a worship service, and there was just this profound move of the presence of the Holy Spirit in the room, and the worship leader was like, I don't have any words, and just kind of like stuck there like a deer in headlights. Meanwhile, the congregation is kind of going, what do we do? And so, after a length of time went by, one of the pastors had to step up
Right.
and take the control of the service in that moment. I don't know how many listeners or viewers today have experienced something like that, but the worship leader didn't know what to do. So following that moment, I took the time to coach that worship leader and ask them, what were you experiencing? What were you thinking? What could you do differently in that moment? And so by having these conversations will help us prepare to be resilient when things happen that we were not aware of or didn't expect. And so that's one of the ways that we can inspire resilience in others is to say, you know what, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to find a way. And, if we can always think about the Grand Canyon and the resilience of water, right? And how it manages to just make its path. And when it's hitting up against a roadblock, well, hey, sometimes it will divert, sometimes it will keep smashing up against that thing until it drills that hole to make that new path. And so we've got to inspire that, especially as leaders, we've got to inspire resilience in the lives of other people around us.
It's interesting that you talk about inspiring others to be resilient because leadership really is being influential through inspiration. You lead other people because you influence them through your personality, your charisma, your message, your lifestyle, that you're dependable. So Chuck Swindoll said leadership is influence that inspires. I refer to that a lot because it's very true. I heard Miles Monroe on a video just last week. Of course, he's passed on now, but what a great leadership minister he was and a coach. And he said leaders must inspire. Not just make them feel good. Inspiration isn't making you feel good. Inspiration is very specific. And in this instance, it's being able to inspire people to be resilient. Some people are just tired, Tom. They've worked too hard too long. They've never taken a sabbatical. Sabbaticals are not retreat, they are self-care. They are sitting under the shade tree and having some protein and carbohydrates and drinking some water and taking a little nap. Because, buddy, as soon as that's done, they're ready for the next obstacle. They can take it. But you got to take care of yourself. And that's part of inspiration. And one thing that leaders do, in their acts of inspiration is that they give people permission to be human, to take care of themselves. Sometimes people will join us in a mission simply because they're people pleasers and they really don't want what we want. They just don't want to lose us. And so they'll say, yeah, I'm on your side. I'll go for you. Really what they want to do is be a groupie and hang on you. And they're really nice people and you shouldn't hurt them. But you need to understand whether or not the situation allows you to inspire them. Maybe they don't want to be inspired to be resilient. Maybe they just want to be inspired to go out and have dinner with you. So, yeah, inspiration, showing people, revealing to people. You know, the whole idea of revelation is drawing back a curtain. And so when you inspire people, you're showing them something that they didn't see before. Mm. You're teaching them why it's so vital. Why are you always just going after it, Tom? Why don't you ever sit down and rest? Let me show you something. You don't see what I see. If you studied every notable leader through history, they all see something that the average person doesn't see. Who's this? I have a dream. I've been to the mountain and I've seen the other side. Mm-hmm. We all know that's Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. We know that he was a leader. Man, he changed the world. Maybe you don't like, maybe somebody doesn't like Martin Luther King Jr. or has a problem with civil rights. Well, you wouldn't have known that if Martin Luther King Jr. didn't show up. He was the rock in the water and you couldn't be passive about him. You had to totally agree with him or not like him at all. And that's the way leaders typically are. We want everybody to like us, but if you're not going to like us, we're going to be all right. Just don't get in our way. And let me tell you why I'm going so hard after this. I want to show you what I see. Mm.
That's good.
I wrote my mission statement this week. Now you may say, what's a guy like you doing writing a mission statement at this point in your life? Well, I pastored churches for a very long time and I enjoyed pastoring churches. But at that time, my mission statement was in cahoots with my church's mission statement. You know, I was the ministry in a sense. People were following me. You know, that's just how our church was wired. So I've had to devise a new understanding of where I am at my present age. This is what I came up with after thought, prayer, lots of number two pencil. I came up with this. I am called by God's grace to love, to perceive, to create, and communicate through songs, pictures, and words. Now, what is that? That's an artist, but it's also a motivator. Art isn't just something you hang on a wall or listen to on your phone or your CD player or however you listen to music. Art is, an artist sees something that everybody sees and passes by. An artist sees an idea, a concept, and paints it, takes the snapshot in just the right way, the light, the shadow, the contrast, the shape, the lines, to get a message across. I want you to see what I see. Mm-hmm. Jesus said it this way to his disciples. Who do you say that I am? Well, you know, some say you're a mystical figure that, you know, you've been reincarnated. You know, who do you, but no, who do you say that I am? And Peter popped up. Oh, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. In that precise moment, Peter saw what Jesus saw. And everybody else went along with it. Peter saw it. Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, because flesh and blood didn't reveal that to you, but my Father, which is in heaven. I'm a preacher. I can't get away from that. If you're listening and you've never been in church, you don't like preachers, well, you know, please bear with me. I'm a preacher. That's how I'm wired. And 10 minutes earlier, Peter couldn't have answered that question. Inspiration simply comes from two words, in the Spirit. That's three words, in Spirit. So if you're inspired because of the Spirit of a thing, you're inspired to root for your football team because of the Spirit in the stands, you know. You'll be inspired to be resilient because somebody shows you the prize. And you want it that bad. I know the prize I want. I want to live till I'm 100 at least. I know. If you're viewing, it's going to blow your mind. I'm 70. I know. Hold on. You're all saying, oh, gasp. No, he looks 30. And you would be right. However, I say 30 intentionally because I want 30 more years. And I have some things I want to do. This is not a session for me to share all those with you, but give me 30 seconds and I will, because I am resilient. I'm going to get up and I'm going to do it. I will tell you, I made an album last year, released it in September. I've given it 10 months for my abilities of inspiration and pushing and understanding where the music industry is. I've given my best in that time, and I realize there's some areas where I'm in over my head. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I am meeting with the management agency out of Nashville, Tennessee, and Jacksonville, Florida, because I can't do it alone. I got to have some people. And I'm going to inspire them. And when they leave that meeting, now they're coming up here to show me why I need to work with them. They're after me now. They're coming after me. But what I'm going to show them is why they don't want to move in the future without me. I am that confident of my objective and of my abilities. Now, you may be listening and say, well, that guy's really conceited. He thinks he's something. Well, I am something. But I'm no better than anybody else. You're something. You just need to understand what your something is and then show people, and they'll be inspired. Your turn.
My
turn. Tag team.
Yeah, that's good stuff. And I think even in that last few moments there, you've been talking, you've been inspiring others, you know, to follow after their passion. And, you know, I just came across this the other day, and I think this is great to interject this, but I love this. We're all tattooed in the crib with the beliefs of our tribe.
Ooh, that's a good one, man.
Good, by Oliver Wendell Holmes.
Oliver Wendell Holmes.
We're all tattooed in the crib with the beliefs of our tribe. And I heard this, it said like this.
I have to write that down.
In that moment, we could not choose to speak Mandarin if we're in an English-speaking home. We didn't have a choice to learn English or to learn Mandarin. We had to learn English. Because
okay, help me out here. We're all tattooed in the crib.
With the beliefs of our tribe.
With the beliefs of our tribe. I just want to pause a second. If you're watching, do you see how Tom and I work together? This is a partnership. We've known each other a long time and we trust each other. And I'm older than Tom. I've been doing what I do longer than Tom has. But he just inspired me with this phrase and with a lot of other things he said today. I need him to lead me in some areas because age doesn't matter. The length of time you've been doing a thing doesn't matter as much. What do you see? And how bad do you want it?
It's good.
And if you're watching, yes, I am enjoying a dumb, dumb sucker. It's not a reference to my personality. I am just fighting a little allergy, and this helps lubricate my vocal cords.
Well, that's good. And hey, enjoy that. So, and the feeling's mutual, by the way. You know, Ken, you inspire me, you know, you have been doing things a lot longer, and you've in many ways blazed the trail. You've been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, so I can glean a lot from your wisdom and experiences. But I think that what I was alluding to earlier is that phrase that we're all tattooed in the crib with the beliefs of our tribe, and that is also when it comes to resilience, right? And as a child, we're picking up all these things. Our spidey senses, if you will, are always picking up these things that are going on in our household, how we handle adversity, how we handle calamity, how we handle fear and process our dreams, the folks in our house. And then those things are kind of tattooed on us, but those don't have to be permanent things. So if we've lived, grown up in a house that there was not much resilience, or there wasn't much inspiration, as Ken talked about earlier, we can develop that. I just did a podcast recently with a man, Aaron Wilbur, of a nonprofit called Ensuring Change. He came out of the inner city, and he grew up poor and had a poverty mindset, but he was resilient, and he decided, I'm not going to stay in that type of mindset. I'm going to go out and I'm going to make a difference in my life and in the world, and I'm going to start with my mind. I'm going to change my mind and get out of that poverty mindset. And then he not only did that, but he wanted to go back to the community he came from to inspire change in them, to give them an opportunity to break that poverty mindset and to come out and just aspire to be whatever it is that they are or could be, entrepreneurs and business owners and so forth. So again, we don't have to be a victim of our circumstance or a victim of our past or a victim of our upbringing, but we can be inspired to move forward and to go after, as Ken said, go after that thing that we see. And sometimes we need that person alongside of us to help inspire us to see the bigger picture. Sometimes we're only seeing this. Like he shared a story about a young man who had the ability to fix cars, and he was just going to be the neighborhood automotive repair guy. And this guy was inspiring him to think beyond that. What about owning garages? Right? What about doing something greater and grand instead of staying just here in this particular community making a few dollars? Why not think of this on a grand scale? So in wrap up today, I wanted to share this. Resilience is not a fixed trait, but a dynamic process that can be cultivated and practiced, right? I want to read that again. Resilience is not a fixed trait, but a dynamic process that can be cultivated and practiced. It involves developing skills, seeking support, and maintaining a positive mindset. You know, if you're one of those wowsy, wowsy, woo, woo, when problems come up and you're faced with those, you know, you're not going to be resilient. A positive mindset that says, whatever adversity comes our way, whenever we are pressed on every side, we've already made a determination that we will not surrender, we will not give up, And we will forge ahead one way or another. We will figure it out. We'll be like that water. We'll figure it out and get to where we need to go. But the better that we focused on these challenging times that we face, you know, when we went through COVID and lots of businesses had to really reinvent themselves. They had to be resilient. That's what we're talking about. How can we be resilient and just continue to maneuver as you would if you were in a raft going down the Whitewater Canyon, right? How do we divert? How do we avoid those jagged rocks and move between them, but still continue in the flow that we're in? And that's what to this podcast today is about, resilience.
I want to just add two things. I'll try to be brief. The first thing is that when we face obstacles and we must be resilient, in this concept of the beginnings of this word, we said it has to do with recoiling, backing up so you can strike again. That obstacle that you're facing is so important. Yeah. Most people see an obstacle as being a pain. No, that obstacle will probably make you. It's important. In that moment, you will know what you need, who you need to take with you, and what or who you need to say it's been a fun ride, but I think I got to go this way now. It's just important to do that. You don't have to be mean to people. You don't have to break covenant with people, but you can't take everybody with you. You have to take some with you, but you're not going to be able to spring into action, which is really a euphemism for being resilient. You're not going to be able to do that if you have a lot of baggage. And I'm thinking of the words of Winston Churchill when he spoke before the House of Commons in 1940, June the 4th, 1940. And these are just a few little excerpts of his speech when Hitler was just taking over Europe and England said, "Dad, we got to get in this thing." And he really inspired America not to sit on their haunches, but go. And this is what he said. "In the confusion of departure, it is inevitable that many should be cut off. Against this loss of over 30,000 men, we may set the far heavier loss certainly inflicted on the enemy. But our losses in material are enormous." And then he goes on to say in his famous speech, "We will fight them on the beach. We will fight them on the land. We will fight them in the air. Everywhere they turn, we will be there to fight them, and we will win." You know, it changed history. It made history. And, you know, where you had some other European countries that acquiesced to Adolf Hitler, not Winston, there were people in the leadership of England or Great Britain that said, "Let's just pacify Mr. Hitler, and maybe if we close our eyes, it'll go away." But Churchill saw something that nobody else saw. He said, "No, we can't. We cannot lay down here." And so the rest is history.
Well, I will put a pin in it right there. I think that we've really brought to light the meaning, the definition, and perhaps the inspiration of the word resilience. And so we'd like to hear from you if you have experienced a story that you could share with us in regards to resilience, of when you snapped back from a difficult situation, which we really didn't get time to do with each other today, to share from those perspectives. But if you have a story to tell, we'd love to hear about it. You can send an email to me at tom@realleadershipcompany.com. And we'd like to hear from you on that. And we'd always like to hear your attitude of gratitude, because we believe that that's what makes your day become brighter when you're thankful for the things you have in your life and around you. So, Ken, is there anything coming up in your life right now as we wrap up?
Well, I'm working on my fall concert schedule, and I'm working on a book that is a complement to my latest album, Legacy, Songs for My Family. And I'll be talking about legacy and what it means, what it looks like from the leader and the follower, and about why legacy is so important. So I'll have some dates to share, but you can check out my website. It's really simple, kensheltonmusic.com. You'll find me there, and you can buy my music if you want to. You wouldn't hurt my feelings if you did, or you can just listen for free. And either way, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome.
How about you, Tom?
Yeah, so there's everything's going on. It's great. I want to encourage you to join us for our leadership think tank that's going on every Monday morning at 8 a.m. on Zoom from 8 to 9 a.m. You can come with an idea, with maybe something you're hashing out. Maybe it's a decision you need to make and you just need a council of people in a mastermind perspective. You can join us at 8 o'clock a.m. on Monday mornings for that. And you can go to realleadershipcompany.com/events and click on the leadership think tank icon there and just register. It's completely free. I would love to have you come on board. And even if you don't have anything to share and you'd like to be a fly on the wall in the room, come on and be a part of that as well. And then I want to tell you also that I am also a realtor. So if you're looking to buy or sell a house, or you just need a referral to a special service of that nature, of lawn cutting services or whatever the case may be, contact me and let me be your liaison to connect you to those different services. But you can contact me at tomrayrealtor@gmail.com for more information on that. And that's R-E-A, Tom Ray Realtor. That will do it for today. Thank you so much for being a part of this. We encourage you to subscribe to this podcast, comment on this podcast, share this podcast. We greatly appreciate it, and we appreciate you taking the time today to take this journey with us. And we encourage you today to be resilient. Be resilient. Anything else, Ken, as we close?
I just am grateful for this opportunity, and that's really all I have to say.
All right.
Or well, as Forrest Gump said, that's all I have to say about that.
Well, thank you for joining us today on Life, Love, and Leadership.